Welcome back to RPE. My name's Dustin, and today I am with Aaron, and we're going to talk about creatine. Creatine is a supplement that a lot of people in the gym use, but as we break down the science and research behind creatine, we're going to find that a lot of people can benefit from using creatine, not just those who work out in the gym. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. So today's podcast, I really want to hone in on creatine. So I'll start by just saying like what it is. That way we have a general reference for the rest of the stuff we talk about. So basically it's the backbone to making your muscles contract. So it's basically, think of it as a really small micro nutrient thing that works in your body. And basically it helps with that first energy system that we'll kind of allude to in a second. It's found in some natural foods, so a big one is steak. So for all those steak lovers.
A lot of meats as well.
Yes, lot of meats. I think it's 2 to 3 grams in a steak, something like that. So that's the general thing with how much creatine is found in like the natural
foods. In a normal portion size.
Right. So yeah. It's not like this is totally abstract, found in a supplement, because it is in foods. Right. So traditionally, it's a supplement used for weightlifters, bodybuilders, 5 grams a day. It's very inexpensive. If you ever see creatine monohydrate or micronized creatine, it's the same thing. Micronized just means what form it's in, but it's always monohydrate. Well, for the most part, if it's on the market, it's monohydrate. That's the only one we're really going to allude to, because that's all the studies talk about monohydrate. They don't really allude to whatever the other one is. So now an interesting thing is it safe? Is it effective? All that stuff we'll get into. But the NCAA actually banned creatine. So
pretty recently, right?
Yes. I think it was 2018, 2019.
2018.
And it's because one of their biggest reasons, because there's not enough longitudinal studies on creatine. That was one of their main reasons. So I was kind of surprised that that would be a reason to ban a supplement, where, as what we're going to talk about today, there's tons of studies that show how effective it is, how safe it is.
And your body even produces it naturally.
Right.
And it's banned, which is very interesting.
It is interesting. And so, and it, the reason wasn't because it changes the game or changes the physiology that much.
Testosterone. Right. Because your body also produces testosterone.
Right.
But there's a huge difference, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Because I just think it's interesting that the reasoning had to be because there's not enough longitudinal studies, or we haven't seen a lot of studies that track how safe and effective it is for a long period of time, which might be contrary to something that I found. I found a study that talks about they followed women for a whole year, so kind of longitudinal.
Interesting.
If you ask me.
Yeah.
So anyway, so what I want to ask you is it supposed to help? What is it supposed to help? Because it can kind of be confusing if it's just a mainstream supplement. What is it actually supposed to help?
Yeah. Now, that's a good question, and I think a lot of people really want to know, if they're paying money for creatine phosphate, why does it help? What does it do to your body? So essentially, creatine, for short, helps. The interesting thing is it helps every single cell in your body to some degree at the molecular level. And essentially, it's helping your body to perform an energy-demanding task. So creatine phosphate is normally synthesized by the liver, but you can also consume it in your diet, like we were talking about, with a lot of meat type products, and there's other sources as well. But it's named for the phosphagen energy system. So that's where we're getting phosphagen from. And it's one of the three body systems that we have. And it's designed for producing ATP energy at a very short duration, and for providing energy for a very high intense activity.
Okay.
So your body basically is going to resort to creatine phosphate at the very start of a very high intense exercise or any type of physical activity.
Okay. Like getting up from a chair fast?
Yeah, you would actually, even stuff that's more daily living.
Yeah.
Your body is going to resort to creatine phosphate very quickly. And so essentially what happens is there's a molecule called ATP that a lot of people talk about. It stands for adenosine triphosphate.
Oh, big word.
And so a big word, but you need that ATP for anything that your cell is doing.
Okay.
For energy.
Got it.
So to make ATP, a lot of times what your body will do is take ADP, which is basically adenosine diphosphate.
As opposed to triphosphate.
Triphosphate with three phosphates.
Okay.
It'll add that ADP to creatine phosphate.
Picking up the third phosphate.
Picking up the third phosphate.
Making ATP.
Making ATP.
I see.
And it's the most simple equation in the body in regards to energy systems of the three.
Yeah.
And so it can make ATP very quickly.
Which
makes sense that it only lasts for a very short duration.
Got it.
Specifically, about 0 to 15 seconds of activity.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
In general. Yeah. It's not cut and dry like that.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, that's the idea of what creatine phosphate is.
Okay.
I was going to kind of refer to a study I read just a little bit about, but it's by Gaston PB is his name. And the title is called Energy System Interaction and Relative Contribution During Maximal Exercise from the Journal of Sports Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially all they were doing was trying to decide if ATP energy really is coming from creatine phosphate for a very short amount of time.
Okay.
And they were conclusive that it is.
Okay, sweet. So it's even like tested.
Creatine phosphate does not produce energy for very long.
Got it.
But very high intensity exercise.
Got it. And it can do it fast, which is different from anaerobic and aerobic, which might take a lot longer.
Yes.
But it's more energy.
Yep.
Created. But also it's more energy that can be sustained and created
for longer periods of time.
Right. So, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like the equation. That's an easy thing. Diphosphate, now triphosphate.
ADP plus creatine phosphate.
Right. So it is the link. So in terms of the supplement, because your liver can already make it and has to, as a, like shown by what you were just talking about. It's the first energy system for a lot of those activities that we do throughout our day.
Yes.
Fast movements, you know, things you don't think about. Am I using carbs when I do this? Maybe not. You might just be using your ATP from your creatine phosphate system.
Yeah.
So as far as in the gym, I always ask clients, like, hey, how much creatine are you taking? Most people are 5 grams a day. That's what I take, 5 grams a day when I'm on creatine, depending on what training split I'm doing. So I just started now. I typically do a strength plan in the beginning of the year. And I'm always on creatine then, but I started it now just because I'm doing kind of the lower repetition-based resistance training. So how much should you take if you're new to creatine? There's two ways to look at it. You always want to load up, so that's the idea, creatine loading. And so there's a fast or rapid, and then there's a slow. And so with the rapid, there's so many different ways. Some people will take 20 grams for the first 3 days. Which is just a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, I mean, how many steaks do you have to eat? So 20 grams for 3 days, and then they'll take 10 grams for the next 3 days, and then they'll eventually wean themselves off of that after that first week to 5 grams a day.
Gotcha.
The slow load, which is more common, is you start with 2 to 3 grams a day. You do that for a week, and then you go up to 5 grams a day.
And you're slowly amping up to 5.
So the idea is to get to 5 grams a day, which is interesting because asking how much do you need for it to be effective is a good question, because if the rapid versus the slow is way more effective and I'm starting a strength plan, well, I want to know. And studies show that it was actually the same amount of creatine serum concentration in the blood, regardless if it was rapid or slow. So it was the same. So the idea is to always be continuously loaded up on creatine. But you can't, like, have a lot of creatine in your system at one time where your body can't control it. So, which was interesting that, because I would expect to see rapid, you're taking 20 grams, how many, that's going to take the other guy almost 4 or 5 days to eventually get that, and you're taking it in one day. And so I'd expect him to have higher energy created from the CP energy system, but it wasn't the case. What's even more interesting is, if you take a low dose, so let's say you don't want to take 5 grams a day just because, you know, you might think it's harder on your kidneys, you might think you're not hydrated enough, which is always an important factor when it comes to supplements. You can take 2 grams a day to have positive results, which
only 2 grams.
It was very surprising. So I guess that's only one steak a day.
Yeah.
But There were studies that showed older men, which again is just interesting because when I think of creatine, I think of young men in the gym trying to put up a lot of weight. That's like the clientele I think of.
It's a stigma.
Yes, definitely. So when this study showed that, like, we're talking 60 to like 75-year-old men were having positive outcomes. And what I mean by positive outcomes, having more lean body mass, having more of that creatine in their blood system, was only at 2 grams a day, which is kind of surprising.
Also very affordable.
Yes.
Think about it.
No kidding. Especially if you're retired and you're like, oh, how do I work that into my budget? So I will say though, that a lot of trainers and a lot of active professionals always pair creatine with whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what I alluded to at the beginning. Like, I always tell my clients, first of all, we need to be on protein. That's always the first thing that I always suggest to them of some sort. It doesn't have to be a supplement. We just might need to eat more veggie protein or meat protein in their diet. But most people are moving. They have a busy schedule. They don't really have a lot of time to cook that extra chicken or beef, whatever, or eat the extra beans.
Yeah, in my scenario.
Yes, in your scenario. So a supplement is really important, but that's almost always paired up with creatine. And a lot of these studies, which I was also surprised to see, was the same way. A lot of them showed that lean muscle mass did come, and it was a positive outcome, but it's because we were paired up with creatine and whey protein. So another way that you can see if your creatine is working is, are you getting stronger? So if you're at a plateau on your bench, try taking creatine and see if it actually helps get that extra rep or feel stronger, or those one or two extra reps when you're doing a set of six or something like that. Because again, it's only going to help with what you said, only about 0 to 15 seconds, typically standard.
Right.
So that's kind of some things that I found. So I'll ask you again, since you are a fitness professional as well, does creatine work in general? So in the general sense, is it effective?
Yeah, so a lot of times people will use the word, is this supplement or is this substance ergogenic?
Mm.
And so just to clarify, ergogenic substances are basically anything, any substance, mechanical aid or training method that will improve sport performance.
Okay.
And so I'm very familiar with the NSCA and you're with the ACSM.
Right.
So they're going to refer to ergogenic substances a lot. And so if you hear something that is ergogenic,
mm-hmm.
it will help with performance, or at least they're alluding to that it will.
Got it.
And so there is, from multiple studies, evidence that shows that creatine phosphate is ergogenic.
Got it.
And so it will help not only athletes, but also people who are just trying to get leaner or stronger. And so I did kind of check out some studies that were alluding to this topic. But we are focusing on the pharmacological efficacy of creatine phosphate rather than like a different form of ergogenic aids. So that's with creatine phosphate, that's kind of one distinction.
Okay.
But we have seen more benefits as a continuous supplement, which is kind of what you talked about, versus using it in a single workout to increase a bout in performance.
Got it. Okay.
So it seems like from like studies, for example, Hoffman and colleagues, they wrote a study in the International Journal of Sports Nutrition and Exercise Metabolism that kind of alluded to the topic of creatine phosphate seems to be a better supplement when it's taken continuously over a long period of time.
Okay.
So that's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
You can't really just take creatine phosphate for a little bit of time or for one bout of workouts. So is it efficacious? Is it efficable? Yes, especially if you're taking it in the long run, you're taking it consistently and you're adding protein in with it.
Got
so
it.
That's a pretty big distinction. So that's kind of my my main thought on that.
Yeah, no, that's good. Actually, that's important because I alluded to I only go on creatine when I'm doing a specific training style.
So you have experience with it. Like you've actually taken it for long periods of time, right?
Right.
So you know kind of what it does.
Yes.
To your body specifically.
Yeah, and I've seen the positive effects when I'm on a strength program, when I'm taking creatine.
Mm.
So I'll take it for about 3 to 4 months. That's typically how long that the program I'm thinking of is. And I always see positive outcomes with lean body mass. I'm also on whey protein.
Yep.
I'm eating more during that time. I wouldn't consider it bulking, like we talked about in the other podcast. It definitely not cutting. If anything, it would be a calorie surplus or maintenance calories. But as far as the creatine, it definitely does help. And I'll be doing 5 sets of 5. And so you can really see it show up when you're doing heavy weights.
Heavy strength focused.
But I think it's interesting because if people take it in their pre-workout, is it actually going to help with that workout right then? Not necessarily. If you take that pre-workout consistently, then yeah, because then you're consistently taking, 2 to 3 grams typically is in a pre-workout.
Right.
So then it would be. But that's kind of an interesting point. If you're going to try this out as a supplement, you're going to need to try it for a longer period of time. And so I would argue probably 3 months to see a really positive outcome.
Yep.
Which most programs are anywhere from 6 to 12 week programs. So if you can, try to take creatine for 3 months to see if you have those positive outcomes.
For a full program.
What I think is interesting is how creatine has not just been looked at from the bodybuilding and fitness side of things, mm-hmm. but also different aspects of life. So for those who are older, is this a supplement I should be taking over the counter? Like I take my vitamin D, my omega-3s, my zinc, whatever it is. So a couple things that they looked at neuromuscular fatigue. I thought this was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing strength training, and when we're talking anaerobics, we're doing low repetitions, a lot of weight, you're stressing your central nervous system out so much because we're talking compound movements as well. So it takes so much central nervous system focus that they actually wanted to test neuromuscular fatigue. Interestingly enough, the creatine did not directly correlate with fighting against neuromuscular fatigue, which I guess is kind of what I expected, because what you said at the beginning, it's a physiological component of the CP energy system.
Yep.
So it's we're trying to make the muscle contract. We're not trying to fight against neuromuscular fatigue,
which deals with electric potentials. So yes. I'm not sure how creatine phosphate would change a positive or negative charge on.
Yeah,
the right. axons coming down
right
into all the muscles. That's an interesting study.
I know. I thought it was interesting, and it was actually they focus on older women, and so maybe something
very relevant to a lot of people who
exactly
who might could benefit from it.
Then they also showed I would say they also tested creatine with osteoporosis and bone health, direct positive correlations with taking creatine and having healthier bones and reducing osteoporosis in the sense of inhibiting the lifestyle, not actually bringing back bone growth by any means.
Right.
Very interesting. That's where that longitudinal study was, that 12-month study on women.
Which is very rare
to have a study. I know, that 12 long. Months. And they did checkups at month 4 and 6 and at month 12.
Yeah.
And they, each time, the creatine levels, I think they were on 5 grams a day. The creatine levels in the blood were the same. There were so many parameters that they made sure that this was safe and effective. They were taking urine samples, blood samples. They were quality of life samples, all these tests. And they found out that it did help because a lot of the correlation was coming indirectly. There's more lean muscle mass now in the lower body because they were also doing training, of course,
right?
With that study. But there was more lean muscle mass, and that's going to help take so much weight off of that shear force that happens at your joint without those supportive muscle structures. And then what was, I think, the most interesting is there was a positive correlation to bone density and bone size, which is so weird. But if you think about osteoporosis, that's a really big, important factor. It just came to my mind. Specifically, they said the femoral neck. So that part of the hip that gets broke all the time.
When you fall,
they said
an elderly individual.
Yes.
That's huge.
That's the part that gets snapped right there.
Yeah.
It had more density to it. Very interesting. I'm like, what? I just thought this was just supposed to help my muscles get bigger. You know what I mean? Or help me in the gym put up my one rep max because I was trying to do 5 or 10% more. So as far as a supplement, your body responds differently every time. And so when you're taking certain supplements, you're supposed to hydrate more. You're supposed to take it at the same time of day. Your body might respond in a positive or negative way. So what are the different ways your body responds when taking creatine?
Yeah, so I think the most common thought when people are talking about creatine phosphate is probably that you are going to increase your total body weight, which is true. You will see an increase in total body mass.
Okay.
But one important distinction to note is that you'll have an increase in more fat-free mass versus fat mass.
And that's so huge. Like
all those people, all those individuals that aren't necessarily wanting to just get huge, they're just trying to stay healthy, get in the gym, work out a little bit, they can still benefit from creatine phosphate because you're going to help yourself to increase fat-free mass. And if you're increasing fat-free mass, you're making yourself more metabolically active overall because you have more muscle tissue that's active. And you're not necessarily going to get huge.
Right. Okay. That's a good thing to point out there because when you're saying lean muscle mass, I'm thinking how much? You know what I mean?
Because it facilitates lean mass. But remember, if creatine phosphate's helping your cells with energy production, that's not a direct like muscle building action.
I see.
It just assists your body to do more activity, recover faster. Therefore, not only will you see an increase in fat-free mass, but you'll also see more contractile protein synthesis. And so your muscles,
actin and myosin.
Actin and myosin.
Okay.
And so if they're building up, your cross-sectional diameter is getting thicker.
Yes.
So over time, it will help you to do that.
Ah, I see.
But it's not going to cause that directly.
Got it.
And so ultimately, I think a lot of people that are just trying to be healthier, lose some weight, can benefit from creatine phosphate.
Okay, sweet. Well, that's a good point. I didn't know that. I guess if you think about it long enough, no, you still don't come to that conclusion. That's definitely something you'd have to point from a study.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess the concluding thought is, given your opinion and what you know and what you found in myself, it is safe.
For sure.
It is definitely effective. And I think to add on how effective it is in multiple aspects of someone's life, because a lot of those studies showed a positive increase in quality of life.
With older individuals, too.
Yeah.
Not just 20-year-olds.
Exactly. Not just the guy who's in his 30s and wants to peak at a one rep max.
Right.
Because now he's feeling stronger and his metabolism slowed down. And he's like, this is my time. I'm going to go on creatine. These are older people, too. So all in all, it is a safe and effective supplement. So it's definitely something that I'm personally going to continue to suggest to clients if they ask about supplements. It's never something I'll just force on a client, just because if they aren't into supplements or don't want to go on a supplement base, that's completely fine. So I think this concludes that it's a good thing. So
take your creatine.
Take your creatine. 5 grams, 2 grams a day.
For a long time.
Yes. Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Make sure it's a long